Welcome to Heart Yoga Radio. It's the 26th of July. We're still in the midst of a heat wave. I want to talk briefly about a couple of themes that I keep returning to, sometimes tangentially, sometimes a little bit full on. Both of these themes still need more work. In fact, they seem inexhaustible in how much analysis they stimulate. And the two themes are value and naturally occurring communism. Well, these have jumped back into my consciousness, and truthfully, they never go that far away, is because I heard David Graeber talking about human value. And David Graeber is a very stimulating thinker. I read his book on debt, which he elucidates the relationship between money and debt. Historically, by considering the last 5,000 years. Now, Graeber's an anthropologist. He's no slouch when it comes to economic theories either. And his way of looking at this stuff, it's very fresh. He claims that his orientation is towards anarchism. He's well versed in Marxism, however, which he claims he approached through feminism, through Marxist feminism. So he's got just very interesting and fresh take on all this. And I've been checking out what he has to say about his latest book, which I intend to read fairly soon, which is called Shit Jobs. And he's just got a very fresh take on work as well, and he makes the point that most work actually is really, really boring and dull and shit, but you think you've got to do it, and we've all been persuaded we've got to do it, and there's not much of a valuation of leisure and time. Now, what Graeber wants to do is to invert the crude Marxist approach to value. Of course, in Capital, Marx talks about value a great deal. But from the point of view of production, value is produced by labour within a complex context of legalities and customs and economic dynamics known as capitalism. And Marx's focus is on production. He's following Adam Smith to some extent on this, because Adam Smith has got a lot to say about production in the Wealth of Nations, and particularly about the division of labour, which was central to the beginnings of mass production and factory production. So that, of course, Adam Smith's finest example is the manufacture of pins. You know, there's one guy who makes the head for the pin. There's another guy cuts the wire. Some other guys extrude the wire. Somebody else puts the point on it, grinds the point. And that enables faster and a greater volume of production. Division of labour is the first simple way of increasing productivity. That's been known a long time. Archaeologists have discovered Neolithic factories for making beads. Well, it's evident from the residue and the structures and all the rest of it that there was a division of labour factory manufacturing system going on way, way back then in the Stone Age. So it's not like a new thing, but of course it got a fresh impetus with the Industrial Revolution. So there's this emphasis on production. Value comes from production. And actually what Marx is capturing there, rather than a desideratum, a recipe for the future, what he's capturing is actually what's going on with this capitalist industrial production. And this emphasis on the objects produced, of course, has found its way through right the way into the 21st century as commodity fetishisation and the whole apparatus of manufacturing discontent, and through the manufacture of discontent, the manufacture of the desire for iPhones. And all the rest of the toys. And value is still in things. Actually, value is, I suppose, in a sense, moving away from things to how much you're worth, to numbers. It's like an even greater abstraction than endowing an object which might actually be useless, like a piece of jewellery, but nevertheless endowing it with value. And it's only a short step from there to how much are you worth? That becomes your value. There's a comic character in a really good TV series called Silicon Valley, which just does a very good job of bringing out the humour in the whole kind of Silicon Valley entrepreneurship, geek, programming, coding environment of Silicon Valley. It's very funny. I recommend it, especially if you've got an affection for geeks and an appreciation of digital technology. You'll laugh. I can assure you, you'll laugh. There's a character in that who just basically, just by playing various markets and doing bits of venture capital and buying this and selling that and screwing people over left, right and centre, who is basically obsessed with his status as a three commas. Three commas, of course, you need to write out a billion. So there's three commas in the digit, 1 billion. And the guy has his own brand of tequila, which is called Three Commas Tequila. And at some point, things are going badly for him. And he's deeply distressed and in an existential quagmire because he's worth under a billion. He's only two commas. And so he has a concerted program to re-billionise. Now, it's a cartoonish representation. But nevertheless, it's very funny. And it's funny because everybody recognises how crassly we give status to somebody's bottom line, somebody's net worth. It kind of counts. It endows status. And we laugh because we know it's crass, and we don't have to know what it's like to be a billionaire to understand that. And many of the consumer objects that we're persuaded to get into debt for are in fact status symbols, you know, and they plug into sort of deep levels of fetishisation and insecurity. There's a good understanding of psychology on the part of the movers and shakers of this culture and of this world. Graeber's point is to say that revolutions are actually always like ethical transformations, or changes in an ethical paradigm. And he's suggesting that what is needed, if we want a revolution, to get away from this kind of destructive system that we have now, is one which shifts value from products and things and objects to one which values people. It's rather like the Greeks, you know, people, we value people for their character and their talents and what they give to everybody else. So you see, it's on this paradigm shift that the business of society would become the production of people, not the production of things. Learning would be important. Following your weird would be important. Collecting more things than you need wouldn't be important. Manufacturing things would be something that would be gladly handed over to automation to free up time. And this is where Graeber makes his point that work is generally shit. And I'm kind of in accord with him on a lot of these points. And what this would be, what this utopia would be one in which naturally occurring communism would have been allowed to expand and breathe out and express itself rather more than it does at present. And if you like, this is the utopia sketched out in the Communist Manifesto. You know, you're a fisherman in the morning and a philosopher in the afternoon and all that kind of stuff. Even though actually, if you read the correspondence between Engels and Marx on that one, Marx was kind of being a bit ironic. He was taking the piss a little bit. But they allowed themselves a purple passage. And if we were going to put that in more sober language, it is to say that there is a desideratum in which the central value of a society is the making of people, and the self-making of people is the project of human life, of producing the good life, and of doing that in concert with others, as of course we would do given some very primordial facts about our nature. And for the powers of production, partly technological and partly to do with manner of organisation, are given over to serving human beings rather than becoming the masters of human beings, which again, as at present, and we've got this modern divergence with these kind of fairly woolly categories of conservative and progressive. These terms are pretty woolly, and they get used as swear words, and they get entangled in polemical and propaganda projects, and become very imprecise and not that usable. But what is lurking underneath that dichotomy, which is useful, is the recognition on the part of some people who might be loosely classed as progressives, that naturally occurring communism is a good, and that time is a good, and that leisure is a good, and that being able to make yourself is a good, and to placing human beings at the centre of our social projects is a good. There's a dim idea of this that comes out in various things. I mean, the most obvious one being the necessity for security, just basic security in a society for all citizens. Not luxury, just security. Which means not having your kids bombed on the way to school. It means not living in fear of having your house repossessed because your job disappeared overnight because of a trade somebody did somewhere on some stock market or the like. You know, just basic security. And okay, that's perhaps the very, very first step for any of this utopian humanism to happen. The conservative is just simply somebody who just resists all that. And for them, you know, the product is still supreme. And perhaps they've done sort of fairly well in the status games. Propel many features of this culture. But even if not, you know, you can get a kind of a Stockholm syndrome investment in it, fear of change. The insecurity or the resentment caused by gross inequalities of wealth and power are actually enough to paralyse somebody with fear, just as easily as it might motivate them to take to the streets or to build something new. It's a case of just hanging on to the little you've got. And in that scenario, this value switch between value being a matter of products and things on the one hand, and value being the making of human beings on the other hand. So I don't want to overdraw that, because, as I said, the terms have got lost in the obfuscation and clamour and divide and rule tactics and the Orwellian subversion of language per se that's going on apace at the moment. In some ways, the beauty of scholarship is that you can kind of step away from that clamour into the kind of primordial, ivory tower, admittedly, world, where you can see certain paradigms, like the paradigm of production as being the source of value, in their naked form, with a lot of clarity. Admittedly, in an abstract way. I do think it's important, if you can, to connect that with real world lived experience. Otherwise, it remains too abstract. On the other hand, raw lived experience, if it's going to turn into a real politics, just does need reflection and paradigms to work with, and to test as well. It's very important that we kind of test stuff. Dogma is not particularly useful in this matter of who we are to live and what we're going to leave to the people of the future as this tumultuous age unfolds. Now, I am assuming that you know what naturally occurring communism is, because I've spoke about it on numerous occasions in these podcasts. But however, just so you can backfill a little bit here, and it is remiss of me to be doing this now, it should have come at the beginning. But naturally occurring communism is, I would suggest, a cultural phenomenon that's extremely ancient, without which none of the things that we do in an organised fashion would occur at all. And it's all the informal relationships that happen on the factory floor and down the mine and in the shop and in the university. It's the way in which people help each other out of that ordinary human warmth and solidarity. Graeber, to my surprise, brought this up in his podcast about human value and the value of creating human beings. And gave just a really great example. He says you're doing a job and the guys, one of your workmates, is standing beside you and you say, "Pass me the screwdriver." And of course, the guy passes you the screwdriver. He doesn't suddenly stop and barter with you. Says, "Well, how much are you going to give me to pass you the screwdriver?" He just passes you the screwdriver. Yeah. It's that area of life where everything's not a trade, where everything hasn't been reduced to the cash nexus. And my thought, that is the seed of any hope for a human future. It's that, the fact that we still do that. The fact that we have to do that. Darry Greiber describes that kind of communism as the method of organisation. Everything that we do in collectivities and organised bodies. At the ground level. So that's your naturally occurring communism. As you can see, it's automatically implicated in the valuing of people over and above the valuing of things. And that therefore value creation should be seen as what we do in our relationships with each other, in the way we raise our children, in the education system, in the way we use our leisure, in the way that we study, in the way that we allow our curiosity and creativity full flow, all that. And the great thing is that the seed of all this is already present, and not only just present as a sort of a weed that can be uprooted, but present as a key part in the organisational operations that we do currently, even in the midst of capitalism. And it's why we should resist, ultimately, the decisions of big capital when they impact on small communities, and the resistance to fracking and oil pipes and all that, apart from the ecological concern, which is real and should be weighed in. But apart from that, the fact that a small community is resisting the powerlessness that's inflicted upon it by huge capital concerns, which of course, you know, they capture the state, so they capture lawmaking, and they've got immense wealth. They can just destroy you with a lawsuit. Even if they lose, they can destroy you and put you out of action for years. You know, so that bullying should be resisted in the name of human value over the value of things. So I'll be returning to this again and again, I'm sure, and it's yet another consideration of value from a different angle this time. And as I said, I do intend to read Graeber's book, Shit Jobs, even though I think I know what it's going to say, because most work is stupid. And it's slavery. And there's a case to be made for the value of leisure in amongst all that. Just on that, before I leave you, there's a great book from the, I might even be the 50s or the 60s, very short book by Bertrand Russell called In Praise of Idleness. And Russell must have been a proper philosopher, because he managed to corrupt my youth with that book. And of course, shortly after that, when hippie came along, you know, the idea was, well, it's just far more fun hanging around, sitting and playing your bongos in the dirt, making love, doing art, playing music, listening to music, exploring consciousness, blah blah blah. The whole thing was far preferable to either trading on the stock floor or being a career soldier and being responsible for death and destruction all over the place, or slaving away on a factory floor, pulling a lever 100 times an hour for 40 years. What's not to like? What's not to like? Love and peace, what's not to like? So that of course plugs into this this university discourse that I'm having a little paddle around in at the moment. So I think that'll do. Remember to read Debt, The First 5,000 Years by David Graeber. Read Shit Jobs, so I'm going to read it, by David Graeber. If you've got plenty of time, read The Wealth of Nations and Capital, volumes 1, 2 and 3. That's like a reading task, even for a good reader, of a few years, probably. You have to put ice on your head and just get your nose down and get turning those pages and understanding those ideas. So, if you've got that bent, however, it's pretty profitable to look at those works and read, if you can get hold of it, In Praise of Idleness by Bertrand Russell. Anyway, okay, we'll speak soon. Thank you for listening. Over and out.